Once again, military planning had circumscribed the freedom of policymakers. Finally, on August 1st, Russia refused the ultimatum, and France now declared general mobilization. So by August 1st, Russia has ordered general mobilization, France has ordered general mobilization, Austria general mobilization. On that same day, August 1, Germany declared war on Russia. On August 3rd, having given the French an opportunity to rescind their order of mobilization, Germany declared war on France. And on August 4th, Germany would declare war on Great Britain. The lights were about to go off all over Europe, as Sir Edward Grey would say. The great war that so many in Europe had believed was inevitable was now at last upon the Europeans. What had led Europe to this point, to this great crisis? Certainly, if one thinks of the causes in a broad scale sense of this great war that was about to break on Europe, the collapse of the Bismarckian system after 1890, Germany's decision to embark upon Weltpolitik, this new course of foreign policy initiated by William II, bears a considerable responsibility. Nationalism in the Balkans, certainly. The disintegration of the Ottoman and Habsburg empires under the pressure of nationalist and ethnic tensions. And, of course, nationalism in the major states would contribute, as well as the unlearned lessons of a century of relative peace. Europeans in 1914, as they thought of war, thought of short, decisive conflicts, the Crimean War, the Franco-Prussian War, the Austro-Prussian War, the war against Denmark, all of which had been over in a matter of weeks. There was a sense that war was not only glamorous, it was over in short order. There was also the conviction that modern technology made a long, protracted war unlikely, indeed impossible. The one great military conflict of the 19th century, which might have alerted Europeans to the grave dangers that they were confronting by allowing a situation to disintegrate into open combat, was the American Civil War with its great carnage. And that lesson the Europeans had failed to appreciate. It was irrelevant as far as Europeans were concerned. So that nationalism in the major states, a sense that nationalism and national energies now should be unleashed for national objectives was undiminished by the beginning of 1914, even from the lessons that might have been learned. The division of Europe into a system of hostile military alliances, the rigidity of military plans and the role of mobilization, I think, one also has to mention. There were really no alternative plans for the German government. If the Kaiser had decided, well, let's fight a limited war in the Balkans, there were really no serious contingency plans that would allow them to have left the Schlieffen plan. All of this would contribute to a sense in Europe of almost relief when finally the tension broke. When war was declared and the armies began to mobilize to march off to the battlefields, there were, and I'm sure you've all seen the photographs or some of the films, of the wildly cheering throngs in Paris, in Berlin, in London, Vienna, of people, women throwing flowers in the path of the troops, loading up into their train cars with à Berlin or nach Paris, to Paris, to Berlin, a sense that the war would be a glamorous affair in a sense like the charge of the Light Brigade of Alfred Lord Tennyson, that the boys would be back home by Christmas. There was a sense of relief, a release from the tension of over a decade of constant, unremitting international tension. Thus, Europe marched off cheerfully to war in the summer of 1914, and the guns of August would begin to blare.